Hey guys, my name is Tommy. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. My sober date's August 9th of 2015. And I'm truly grateful for a sober date. And it's only by the grace of God that I have a sober date. I went through Austin Recovery back in December of 2014. And one of the things that I was told, when I got introduced to, recovery and the 12 steps is that, staying in service and sharing my experience, strength, and hope was an essential part. And so I completely have done that, through this, 4.5, almost 5 years, since I've been sober. So I guess I'm going to start at the beginning. I was born on April 3rd, 1970 in Galveston. My mom, she was 18 years old, single mom. My dad didn't even realize that I was coming because he had gotten drafted to the Vietnam War. And so he did not get back until I was about 2 years old. And that's when he was made, brought to his attention that I was here. My mother was young. My grandparents ended up, my grandmother took me home with her, and she was trying to get my mother an opportunity to try and finish school. And as a result of that, they didn't want me to have anything to do with my father. So, I didn't know my dad. So just from the very beginning, my life was, just not stable. I didn't have the mom dad role. My grandparents were there, and my grandmother, she gave me a lot of love. But I lost her when I was about 10 years old. And I was about 5 or 6 years old. I ended up, one of my uncles ended up abusing me and several of my cousins. So I went through about 4 or 5 years of sexual abuse. And then I lost my grandmother. And after my grandmother passed away, I was, my life kind of just fell apart. Between the ages of 11 and 15 or 16, I was bounced around. I went through probably a dozen schools. So no stability, no, sense of belonging, started from a very young age. I can look back at that and see that, and kind of some of the things that I did, as I got older to try and compensate, with my children. I started using drugs when I was probably about 11, 12 years old. I started with smoking pot and I started drinking. I did start using meth when I was probably about 13 years old. And that was the first go around with meth. I used it for a few years, started shooting up when I was about 17, 18 years old, right after my son was born. I was pregnant by the time I was 16. By the time I was 17, I had him when I was 18. And his dad and I, the only thing we had in common, was meth and was using and partying. But I got pregnant with my son at a time when it was right after my uncle that had been abusing all of us in my family actually had committed suicide. I dropped out of school. My life just completely it spiraled out of control, started using drugs more. And then I ended up pregnant. And so, that was my way of, I think that was God's way of giving me something to live for, because I was, not in a good place at all. And so I had him when I was 18, but me and his dad were only together for a few years. He was very abusive. I was at a point where I wanted to stop using drugs and he didn't want to stop. And so I ended up leaving. And at this point, I hadn't graduated from high school. I had dropped out as a junior in high school. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a car. At this point, my mom was not even living in Austin. And that's how I ended up in Austin. I ended up coming to live with my mother. And, my relationship with my mom was very, it was hard because she wasn't there for me growing up. It wasn't until I was about 5 or 6 years old that I realized that she was my mother. And it wasn't because anybody was really keeping it from me and my family. It was just that I was raised with my grandmother and she was my mother. And my mom kind of popped in every once in a while. And I know now that she had been sending money to my grandmother and trying to help my grandmother with me, but she was never there. And so when I came to live with her after my grandmother passed away, it was very, very a toxic relationship. I mean, I had a lot of resentments, a lot of anger. I was always angry. I remember being angry, just an angry teenager. And, you know, when I started using drugs, I mean, that just changed the way that I felt. And I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. And it gave me a sense of belonging and kind of like fitting in. And, you know, I was hanging out with, you know, just the wrong people. I lived here in Austin periodically, ran with gangs, on the east side. I mean, you know, ran away a few times. I mean, it was just a very, very crazy, crazy time. And, you know, one of the things that I was, you know, really resentful for was because, you know, when my mom couldn't handle me, what she would do is she'd ship me off somewhere else. I mean, whether it was to my dad's house, because I did finally meet my dad when I was about 13 years old. And so it was, you know, that relationship has been, you know, something that I've had to work on too. But, you know, she would just ship me off. She would send me to my mom's. She would send me to, sorry about that. She would send me to my uncle's, or I had an aunt that I stayed with a few times. And, you know, I went to a meeting not too long ago and I listened to this woman talk about, you know, she kind of grew up the same way. And one of the things that she really worked on was trying to change, you know, because I always thought that she just didn't want me or that she didn't, you know, so that's why she shipped me off. But I heard a speaker one time talk about, you know, how she shifted her thoughts of, you know, and thinking about, you know, her mom loved her enough to try and get her somewhere better, you know, and that's what I had to try and look at, is that, you know, my mom, she didn't know how to handle a teenage daughter, but she was doing the best that she could. And what she was trying to do was keep me out of trouble. So she would send me somewhere else that she thought might be more stable for me. And so, you know, through the work that I've done, you know, with my inventory, I've been able to start reestablishing, you know, that relationship. I started, you know, I had my son, and the day that I came home, I mean, and, you know, it was only by the grace of God, with each one of my pregnancies, I have three children, I was able to stop using drugs and alcohol during my pregnancy. It was the hardest fucking thing I ever did, but I was able to do it. And so, you know, when I got pregnant at 17, I stopped using, but the day that I had, I mean, I'm talking the day I got home, my son went with my mother. And at this point, you know, his father had already started using meth, shooting up. And so that was the first time that I've experienced that one. And so it was on. I mean, the first time that I ever shot up, it was like, that was a feeling that I just wanted to feel all the time. And so, you know, I did that for a couple more years. And when I was about 20, I decided I was done. I knew there was a better life. I just didn't know what that meant or how that looked. And so I needed to stop using drugs is what I needed to do. Or I needed to stop using meth. That's what I thought is, I needed to stop using that. And so his dad wasn't willing to stop. And so I ended up leaving and with nowhere to go. I mean, I didn't know what, I mean, I had a 2-year-old son. I just knew I needed to stop. And so I ended up with a friend of mine, and she stayed, she let me stay with her. And it, you know, it took me about 6 months, and I got, you know, I got a job and I got an apartment. I had gone back to get my GED, and I had gone to this trade school to get, some training, you know, computers at this time, you know, computers were coming out and all this. And I knew that I needed to do something, and I managed to go through a program, and, I got certification for a legal secretary. Never did the shit in my life, but it taught me computers and it taught me, gave me the basics of that. And so, and when I left him was when I immediately got with my ex-husband, which is the father of my two daughters, Sean, and spent the next 25 years with him. And he was, you know, in that game, you know, we were using together. We were all, you know, hanging out together. And he had made the decision also with me that we were going to stop using meth and try and, you know, build a life together, which we did. And we had two daughters together. And, you know, through my 20s and 30s, I didn't use any meth, didn't use any coke, but everything else, I mean, alcohol, smoking pot, did pills, did mushroom. I mean, like, just did whatever. But I was a pretty high functioning addict. I mean, I held a job. I mean, I got into real estate when I was about 22 years old. Started as an assistant, and kind of fell into that, and I've been doing it ever since. Sean and I were together. We ended up having, you know, our oldest daughter, and then we had Marissa. But we were still using, you know, drinking and smoking. And for those of y'all that don't know, I mean, you know, Sean is also an alumni and has been sober, you know, for 8.5 years. And so it was, you know, he was the one who started this journey, and I kind of followed after. But when we, like I said, I was able to stop using when I was, you know, pregnant. But it was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I was miserable. You know, Sean and I were two addicts trying to make it. On the outside, everything looked good. I mean, we were able to build, you know, a couple of businesses, and, you know, we had our kids and they were in school. And, you know, one of the things that I worked really hard on was trying to give my children stability that I didn't have. All three of my kids graduated from the same high school. They have the same, you know, they have friends from their childhood that they still hang out with. And so that was like really important to me. And, I'm just grateful that I was able to, you know, give them some stability in that aspect. But, you know, we were two addicts trying to make it. And, you know, towards the end, it got really ugly. Sean ended up, hitting his bottom before I did. And I mean, I was left to take care of the kids, but I followed soon after. I mean, like, it took me, you know, a few months. I found meth again at 41 years old. And that is kind of where my life kind of spiraled out of control again. And I was, I think back about when I started using it again, and I really, that, you know, that mental blank spot that they talk about, it's like, there was a reason I got out of it when I was in, you know, in my 20s. I mean, it was an ugly fucking drug. It took me places. I mean, I was already shooting up. I mean, it was just ugly. And I thought because I was older that I could handle it, right? It took me a couple of years, and I was at a point where I was not working. I lost the house that we had. My kids weren't speaking to me. Ended up in the hospital because I had started shooting up again and almost died. That was a turning point for me because in that hospital, when they told me I wasn't going to die, I mean, I had been shooting up and I had a miss in my arm. I got an infection and they told me that I might lose my arm. But I didn't even want my family or my kids to be there. I didn't want them to see me like that. And so I didn't know if I was going to die, and I was going to die by myself. And it was at that point, I mean, and actually I had called Sean at like 3 o'clock in the morning. My arm was very swollen and I told him I needed to go to the hospital. And, you know, all he could tell me is, are you ready? Are you ready to tell them what you're doing? And it was there that I made the decision, and I'm so grateful for that decision. You know, I ended up going to treatment in December of 2014. I was there for Christmas and New Year's. And so one of the things that's like huge for me and my sobriety and my recovery is to, you know, since I've been, you know, volunteering with Austin Recovery, is going back during the holidays, because I was there during the holidays. You know, my family, my middle daughter, my oldest daughter, actually my middle child, she went and she visited me every weekend, but she was so angry with me, and rightfully so. You know, I had turned their lives completely upside down. You know, I was there for the 28-day program. I got out. I went to IOP. I really wanted to stay sober. I really wanted to do what I needed to do. I mean, but, you know, when I came out of there, I was worried about, I had been dating this guy that I was with in my addiction that was just totally not good. I was still seeing him when I got out. I was chasing everything, the worldly shit. I wanted the job back. I wanted the kids back. I wanted, you know, an apartment. I wanted all of these things, and I wasn't focusing on the real problem. And that was me and trying to, you know, do the work from the inside out. And, you know, I stayed sober for a few months and I went back out. And when they talk about it, you know, it gets worse every time. It does. And, you know, even though I almost died in that hospital, when I started using again, I told myself, okay, I'll just smoke it, right? Or I'll snort it, or, you know, whatever, I'll eat it. I mean, I just won't shoot it. It was just a matter of months. And I started shooting it again, and I had started selling, and I was, you know, making money doing this and doing, you know, and, you know, this whole time, I mean, my kids, I wasn't seeing them. They were really angry. My youngest daughter, I still saw her. I mean, she's still wanted to see me. And so my ex-husband let her see me, and even though I know that's not what he wanted, but he didn't stop her. You know, and I talk about my relapse because, you know, it's not a requirement, but it's certainly a reality, right? A lot of us relapse, a lot of us go back out, but I'm grateful for that relapse, because when I came back, and there was just something that snapped, I don't know. I remember I just shot up some dope, and my youngest daughter's birthday is in June. My son's is in July. My sober date's August 9th. I had missed their birthdays. I had not seen them. I had not been talking to them. And I was at this house that I was staying at, and I still had a little bit of a dope, and I gave it away, and I told them, I'm done. And so that was a turning point for me, because there was just something that shifted in my mind that I knew that I needed to make some changes, and I knew there was a better way for me to live. And so, yeah, I mean, I called the sponsor that I had, because I had started working with somebody when I was, before my relapse. I called my peer recovery coach, which I still talk to, and I highly recommend that everybody get one. I still see her once, or talk to her right now with everything that's going on, talk to her once a week. And I started doing the work, and the alumni Thursday night meeting was the first meeting that I came back to, and I hit the ground running. I was willing to do whatever I needed to do, and that entailed the work that I didn't do the first time around. And I knew that, you know, step one, the powerless and the unmanageability. I mean, you know, my power of choice was gone. I was willing to do whatever I needed to do to get my drugs and to get them when I needed them. And you know, the unmanageability, I mean, it's just the craziness of wanting to stop, wanting to change my life, but I couldn't as long as I continued using, but I didn't know how to stop. And you know, when I was in that relapse, I mean, I knew there was a better way because I'd already seen it. I saw these people that were having a good time and coming to these meetings and laughing and sharing their stories with me. And I remember being at Austin Recovery and hearing the women that would come in there and share their stories and talk about, you know, and so I didn't feel like, okay, there's other people that go through this. This is not, you know, I lived this whole double life. I had this professional life, you know, during the day, and I would come home and I'd drink and use drugs and do, and I hid all that shit from the people that I worked with. And, you know, and so, you know, I knew there was a better way. And so when I came back, I was willing to go to any lengths. You know, it talks, you know, I had to trust God, I had to clean house, and I had to help others in order to get this deal. And, you know, I was willing to do that. You know, one of the things that Maurice at, when we did Musical Journey, she had us write a letter to ourselves that she was going to mail to us a year later. I got that letter, and there were several things that I had written to myself. But one of the things that I had written to myself was that I hope that I was back at Austin Recovery and sharing my story and still sober. And so keeping in mind that I got this, you know, a year later, which would have been in December of, or January of 2016. Right. So I had already, I'd been sober for a few months. And so, it was pretty powerful to get that. I've stayed in the middle of, you know, the alumni, because, you know, helping others for me is like huge. When I am feeling, or I have something going on in my personal world, you know, and when I make the decision to go ahead, even if I don't feel like it, taking a call from a sponsee or meeting with a sponsee, or, you know, there's been several times that I have had stuff going on and I really didn't want to go through and do, you know, what I had already committed to, but I do it anyway, because that's what I'm supposed to do. And when I get to the other side of that, you know, after meeting with them, it's like, you know, my whole world has changed. My whole insides are changed because, you know, I got out of myself. I mean, you know, and usually when I'm working with another woman, I mean, you know, and they're just starting this whole process. I mean, it's a reminder for me that could be me, you know, and that's one of the other reasons I go out to Austin Recovery, because I need to see those people at day one. I don't ever want to be at day one again, but I need to be reminded every day that that's where I could be. And I could be there. I mean, it just one choice away from that. And I don't ever kid myself to think that I am, you know, I've got this deal. I don't have shit. I have to work at it every day. I have to, you know, get up in the morning and make my connection with God. I have to, you know, when I'm struggling, I have to put my pen to paper and I have to talk to my sponsor or to my peer coach. And I just, when I came back in, I had this whole world right before, you know, when it, with my career and all of these things that I wanted, I made the decision that my recovery was going to be the main focus, and whatever came after that was going to come. And that's what I had to do. I mean, I started working as a receptionist, you know, after making a lot more money than what a receptionist makes. I mean, and I did that for the first couple of years because I wanted to focus on, you know, on my recovery and on working with other women and on doing my meetings. And, and being there for the alumni and, you know, helping with these events and doing everything that I was supposed to, that I'm supposed to do in that aspect. And so, you know, it was real uncomfortable. That whole financial insecurity, I mean, it's my biggest fears are that I'm not a good enough mother, and my financial insecurities. And when I had my relapse, it was the financial insecurity that took me back out. It wasn't even about wanting to use dope. It's because I'd gotten a call that I could go sell some dope and make some money. And I did it a few times, and I thought I was going to get away with it until I ended up using it again. And so when I came back, that, you know, the money wasn't my focus, and it's still not my focus. Money is, you know, an essential part of my life, but, you know, I'm going to be okay. If I lose my job tomorrow, I know I'm going to be okay. And so, you know, I want to share this story with you because it was a really huge turning point for me. And it was really when I had totally and utterly understood what it meant to turn my will completely over to God. I was about 9 months sober, and I was trying to get into an apartment. And I've shared this story, and many of you have probably heard it. And, you know, I was working for somebody, and I was, you know, part of my income, I was doing contract work. So it was 1099 income. I wasn't getting a paycheck stub. And so I went in, I did this application. I'd been working for this guy for, you know, for a little while. And I told him, you know, I can get a letter of employment. I can get you my bank statements. They wanted paycheck stubs, and I didn't have paycheck stubs to get them. So, you know, because I am the type of person that I am, and I can make things happen, because that's what I did. I was always the type of person that if I wanted something, I went after it. You know, it was just a challenge. If I had to go completely out of my way to get it, but I usually got what I wanted. And so my bright idea was to go online and make some paycheck stubs. And so, you know, I had dealt with payroll before with my ex-husband. He was self-employed, had a business, had employees. And so I knew about taxes and all that crap. And I was literally in my office, and I still remember it. I mean, because this was like a huge just awakening for me, because I was sitting there, and I was I had already made one paycheck stub, and, you know, and I was sweating. I had the knots in my stomach. I was, you know, feeling really uncomfortable because I knew I wasn't doing the right thing, right? And I got through that first paycheck stub, and I was printing out the other one, and I stood up and I said, I can't do this. I can't do this. This is manipulating. This is, you know, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I got up and I left my office. I went to a meeting, and that meeting was on the third step. So I called my sponsor, and I didn't get her. I ended up calling my ex-husband, and I told him what I was doing, because that's what I have to do. I have to tell on myself when I have these thoughts, or I have these things that I'm thinking that might sound like a good idea. And he started laughing at me. And I told him I'm going to a meeting, and, you know, and anyway, it was huge. It was a huge turning point, because I realized, okay, God, you want me to have this apartment? I sent them my bank statements with my deposits. I said, okay, this is what I've got. If you can't give me the apartment, then that's okay. And she called me an hour later, and she gave me that goddamn apartment. And that was like, yes. I mean, and when I talked to my sponsor, I told her what I was doing, or what I had started to do, right? And then it was just, you know, if it's God's will, I don't have to fight that fucking hard. I don't have to manipulate. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to struggle with it, you know. And when I know that it's the knots in my stomach, and when I start sweating, that I know that I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be doing, right? At least for me. And so that was huge. It was a huge turning point for me. You know, I had started working with my sponsor as soon as I got back in. I had finished doing my, you know, my step work, and started sponsoring within about 6 months of of getting sober. It was really important to me that I wanted to start sponsoring. I wanted to start helping other women, and I wanted to share, you know, my experiences and you know, what I was doing. And that's all I can do, you know, is share the things that I do to keep the life that, you know, that I've got. You know, I'm really grateful for this program. And, you know, I don't regret my past. I don't, because I'm not that person anymore. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I had to do a lot of inventory on, because, you know, this is not a checklist. It's not like you get through them once and you're done. This is a continuously work on your inventory and your, you know, as you grow and things get bigger and things, you know, you run into, you know, situations or going through experiences. And so the one area of my life was, you know, was being a mom. You know, I had walked out of my children's lives. I had chosen to use drugs and alcohol instead of being the mother that they deserved. And so, you know, they were angry. They didn't trust me, and they had every right to be angry and not trust me. And so, I did a lot of inventory, but one of the things that I really had to do is learn how to forgive myself, through the whole process and know, you know, and I share this with other women, is that I'm, you know, I'm not the same person that I am when I'm using drugs and alcohol. And so, as long as I don't put drugs and alcohol in my body, then I won't make those same mistakes. It took me a while, you know, to rebuild my relationships with my children. I have three amazing kids, and they're, you know, it took me a good, you know, year of working. I mean, I didn't see my two older kids for a few months after my relapse, or after I came back in from my relapse, because I wanted to make sure I was going to stay sober before I started seeing them again. I didn't want to, you know, fail them again. Right. And when they talk about, you know, we can't do this for anybody else. I mean, you know, my kids were great motivators, but they couldn't keep me sober. You know, my job couldn't keep me sober. I mean, I didn't stay sober for anything or anybody else, or can't stay sober for anybody else or anything else. It's for me. And you know, through this whole process, I mean, I've always been very spiritual. You know, I believed in God. I believed, you know, there was something greater than me, but to turn everything over, what the hell does that mean? I didn't understand that to begin with. But what I did is I trusted, you know, my sponsor, and I trusted what I saw in other people. And I just did the work. I did the work. And, you know, so today I can stay, you know, in that third step, and as hard as it is sometimes. I've had one of the hardest weeks that I've probably had in my entire life. My youngest daughter is going through something right now that has really been very difficult for our family. And she's okay. She's just struggling right now. And all I can do right now is I can be the mom that she needs to be, that she needs when she needs me. You know, when I struggle with anything, I just turn to my program. I turn to my sponsor. I turn to the people in this program and just know that this shit works. And I'm nobody special. This works for everybody, as long as you're willing to put the work into it. You know, and I've had to sit down, and I did a little bit of inventory, and, you know, I have a lot of fears right now. And, you know, a lot of it is just the fear of, you know, not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. And I've got to stay present. Unfortunately, I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that understand and they're, you know, there. I know that, you know, it's been really difficult for me, and I know for a lot of people. I mean, we don't have our normal fellowship, right? We don't have the ranch to go to. We don't, you know, I've just been trying to pick up the phone and call people. I've been trying to, you know, engage in these meetings on Zoom. We started a women's meeting on Saturday and a men's meeting on Saturday evening. I mean, you know, this is, we just have to learn and we have to adapt to different ways of you know, getting our recovery, right? And I don't know how long this is going to last, but it's okay. I mean, I know for me today, you know, the drugs and the alcohol are not a problem. I don't have the thought of wanting to use. And I don't, you know, I don't, I'm not willing to, you know, I'm going to have times when I'm going to be uncomfortable and fears are going to come up and things are going to happen that are going to cause me, you know, to be uncomfortable. But I don't have to sit in that shit anymore. I don't have to. I get to do the work that I need to do and talk to my sponsor and talk to my peer coach and talk to the people around me and work through it and have faith. And I know the one thing that I had to learn too is, you know, when I'm turning my will over, it's not because, you know, I expect God to do what I want him to do for me, right? I know that he's going to be there to help me get through and whatever the outcome may be. And help me face it. You know, part of my morning ritual is, you know, I do journal and it's like a prayer journal for me. And I put down on paper, you know, the fears that I have or things that are going on, but it starts out with gratitude, you know, and I'm grateful for the life that God graced me with. And then I, you know, talk about whatever it is that I'm going through, you know, or just, you know, praying for others. And so, you know, that's how I have to start my day. I'm really grateful for this program. You know, I don't have to look at my addiction as a bad thing. I've got a new way of living. And how can that be bad? Yeah, I had to go through everything that I went through, you know, but I get to use all the dark shit that I did and all the things that I did to help other women and let them know that I understand. And that's the part that God, you know, he puts us in places where we can actually use the things that we went through or the things that we did to help others. And so how can, you know, that be bad? And I don't have to ever go back to living that way. And for those of y'all that are just starting, you know, just take this a minute at a time, a day at a time, and know. Just look at other people that have a little bit more time than you do and see, you know, that are doing this deal. And I'm going on 5 years in August. Dude, I couldn't keep I could stay sober for 5 minutes 5 years ago. I never in my wildest dreams thought that I could be sober this long. And I just sober. I'm in recovery. I'm living the life of recovery, and I'm living, and we all can. So I think that may be all I have. Thanks, Chris.
That was so good, Tommy.
Tommy. Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy.